Good morning. Thank you, Your Honor. Robert Hamilton on behalf of Appellant Harry Proudfoot. I'm going to try and reserve approximately 3 minutes for a rebuttal. This case was a case that went to trial and involved a family mining business started by Appellant Harry Proudfoot and involved three of his children. The purpose of the business was to find a mining site. The case specifically involved a mining site found in Ohio, and their goal was to get into production. Investors were provided a PowerPoint, which is in the ER, which was sort of what the government primarily relied upon. In this case, there wasn't a dispute. There was a mining site. There were efforts made. I included the testimony of Mr. Proudfoot's son, Daniel Proudfoot, who was sort of in charge of operations. There was drilling for samples. There was testing of samples. They shipped large amounts of ore to a couple different places to determine the best processing methods. And the way the case set up was
where was there harmful error?
So I find there's harmful error in that, given how the case was set up, the defense that was presented versus the government's position, which was, hey, there was intent to defraud. They never intended to get into production. If you're looking at a harmful error analysis, which is looking at the entire record, not in light most favorable to the government, there was a real dispute over intent. And given that, the two pieces of evidence which form the arguments in this case, the challenges in this case, and that is the admission of Norm Stadley's testimony and the admission of the 1993 order, those were significant harmful pieces of evidence.
Counsel, you yourself just said that intent was the main issue and that it was vigorously disputed. So both of these pieces of evidence pertain to a rational jury's analysis of intent. If there's been fraud in the past, it isn't possible to say, well, this one, it's less possible to say that this one is not fraudulent. And so the question really is, to me, a 403 balancing, and why is this an abuse of discretion?
So on Norm Stadley, starting with the Norm Stadley testimony, I see that testimony sort of in two parts. There is the part about, hey, I gave $700,000 to Mr. Proudfoot, and I had to mortgage my farm for that. There was no testimony about investment materials. The Three Eagles Company did not exist at that time. There wasn't testimony about what happened at Manson Creek in British Columbia. And so I feel that's argument is more inadmissible 404 propensity evidence. The second part of his testimony.
Can we stop there, though, in terms of it does seem intertwined, because when things are going south in Nevada, all of a sudden the Spadellis, you know, kind of get roped into the Three Eagles scheme. And there's a lot of testimony about that in terms of being listed and that sort of thing. So it seems to me that in part it's background information, and then it is intertwined information that would be quite legitimate under 404. And of course, even if we might have said, well, I would or wouldn't have let it in, the question is it reversible error? I'm having some trouble understanding your argument, so maybe you can amplify that with respect to this, what I see as the intertwining between the transactions.
Sure. And I think there's a difference between the son, Eric Stadley. I think there might be an argument that he was convinced to roll his $50,000 into Three Eagles Company. But Norm Stadley, who invested the $700,000, testified that he did not invest in Nevada or Ohio, and he didn't roll anything into the Three Eagles Company. His note that they formulated in February 2008 was before Three Eagles ever even came to exist in April of 2008, and it was about 18 months before the September 2009 discovery of the Ohio site that they proceeded on. So Norm Stadley did not roll his money into the Ohio site. And what essentially came out is there was a
test. What happened to his debt?
So nothing. So there was.
Didn't it get rolled onto the books?
What happened was appellant Harry Proudfoot directed some $5,000 interest payments. Norm Stadley testified that he received, I think, three interest payments of $5,000. But
and those were from the Three Eagles?
That was from Three Eagles. But that's also what was testified to by his son, Matthew Proudfoot, Daniel Proudfoot, and Harry Proudfoot himself in his SEC testimony, which is in there. They all said there were these $5,000 payments that were made that the children said, you cannot be paying him. He is not a Three Eagles investor, and the money, these $5,000 payments can't go to him. And so Norm Stadley was not an investor for Three Eagles. And there was significant testimony about the $5,000 payments. And the government was saying, hey, that was the argument. We needed to show these $5,000 payments. There was no dispute the $5,000 payments were wrong. What they wanted it for was, in closing, they described Norm Stadley as a victim of Three Eagles. And it was extremely prejudicial under a 403 analysis. And I think it also shows that the true purpose was not the intertwined aspect of the $5,000. The true purpose was the $700,000 I had to mortgage my farm. And it was extremely damaging. And that was not inextricably intertwined with the Three Eagles investment.
Counsel, you're down to a little over 2 minutes. I don't know if you want to save some time for rebuttal. You mentioned that.
I will. I would just quickly, I'll go a little bit further. And I just wanted to note on the duty to disclose. I think it's a straightforward issue that the district court was correct on. And the question is whether there is a duty to disclose based on a half-truth and these generalized claims of success. And just going through the cases, Lustiger was about availability of water on these plots being sold. Lustiger cites a case called Casey, which is about supposedly selling exclusive franchises. Martinelli, which I think the government and I cite, are about, it's about helping small owners sell businesses for a small initial fee. But they use false testimonials and all buyers are pre-qualified. And Loriente is failure to disclose bonus commissions. I would just like to emphasize the generalized claim of success in this case. I cannot find any case law that suggests that would open the door to the 1993 order, which was the basis of it being admitted. What was that half-truth? And I'll reserve the rest of my time. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll hear from Ms. Potter.
May it please the court, Amy Potter on behalf of the United States. Judge Simon did not abuse his discretion in admitting the testimony of Norm Stadelli or the 1993 cease and desist order. And I'll start with Mr. Stadelli because what defendant is now arguing is that Norm was never an investor. Well, he was, in the sense that Harry Proudfoot pulled him in to the Three Eagles investment. And how that happened was Mr. Stadelli made a $700,000 investment in a prior mining organization. And they couldn't pay him. and he wanted his money back. And so what did Harry do? Harry said, well, why don't you come on over to Three Eagles? And we have government's Exhibit 190, which is an email about, welcome, you're an investor. But we also have another thing that Harry does, another thing to lull Mr. Stedelli into not asking for his money back. He says, I'll put you on the board. I'll put a picture in all my promotional materials, and I'll say you're a member of our board. And so when Norm comes, he said, yes, I did not invest in Three Eagles. But I counted on Three Eagles to pay me back, because that's why Harry was giving him the interest payment. And I don't know why Harry put me on that. I didn't do anything on the board. But this is all part of the lulling, because what Mr. Proudfoot didn't need was angry prior investors screwing up his investment opportunities with his current investors. Because what he needed was to get $3.2 million. And what did he tell the investors the $3.2 million was for? Was to build a mine. But then you can go to government's Exhibit 266, and the updated one, I believe, is in the SCR at 4-5. And they spent about $350,000. The government never disputed it. $350,000 on different mining operations during that four-year period. During that same four-year period, they paid themselves over $800,000 in salary, and then paid separately from salary, because I know there was a lot of argument about, well, the jury heard about and that the investors thought legitimate salary was okay. Well, legitimate salary is more than double the investment into the mine, may not have been legitimate. But there was also payments for jewelry, payments for a vacation home. All these are separate payments above and beyond this salary. So when Judge Simon, and I think one thing to remember in this record is Judge Simon had a rare opportunity for a trial judge, because this case was tried first. A first time, but there was a mistrial because defense counsel was ill. He had already heard all of this testimony once before, and he allowed the parties to come back. He redid the entire pretrial conference. He reheard everything. He reconsidered his rulings, and he once again decided Norm and Eric Stedelli were relevant and admissible, and he found that the cease and desist order was a half-truth. But even if this court were to find that somehow Judge Simon abused its discretion, any error was harmless. When you look at how long the Stedellis testified, total testimony for the two of them was about 33 minutes on a day where the jury heard over 5.5 hours of testimony. And there were five-hour days of testimony. 12 total victims, 18 total witnesses. And the cease and desist order was one exhibit out of over 200.
I have a question about the cease and desist order. Is any other justification given besides the half-truth of his supposedly successful career? For example, was there an argument that it showed intent or knowledge or other aspects that were required to be proved?
Yes, Your Honor, and you can see at the pretrial transcript at page 57, the government argues that under the law, the 1993 order is probative of an intent to defraud. And so we did argue that as an alternative basis. When you look carefully at Judge Simon's order, I think he focuses more on the half-truth, but I do believe we argued intent to defraud on page 57 of that order. So I think the overwhelming evidence, including evidence as simple as in August 2010, telling the investors, we're almost there, we're almost in production, and an investor sends another $10,000. But we find out that there's no production going on. In fact, a year later, there's $1,500 in the bank, and they're under SEC investigation, and they're still seeking investors. That's the evidence that the jury relied on. And we know the jury looked carefully because they actually hung on one of the money laundering counts involving a vehicle that was purchased, because that vehicle was used one time for the business. And so the jury thought, you know what, maybe that one is actually an okay purchase. We ended up dismissing because they hung. But so this notion that they focused on 30 minutes of testimony and ignored everything else that was presented just isn't borne out by the record. And that's not, there's no, there's a fair assurance that this verdict was based on the evidence, and the evidence of fraud was overwhelming. There is a restitution issue. I think that's a factual question, one that the judge made a determination that Norm Stedelli had been pulled in by Harry Proudfoot into the Three Eagles. I think the law is clear. I submitted a 28-J letter on Monday regarding the fact that this court has made clear that restitution isn't cabined to just the exact counts of the indictment. So I don't believe that Judge Simon's finding that Norm Stedelli was part of this fraud, was owed restitution, is clearly erroneous on this record. And unless the court has further questions, I'm happy to submit.
I don't see any rush to ask further questions, so thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And you have a bit of rebuttal time remaining.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just on the alternative argument of intent on the 1993 order and page 57 of the pretrial conference, I would note, similar to the government's brief in this case, that argument is, it ties an intent to Lustiger. In other words, it's about that the omission of disclosure, omitting the 1993 order in relation to the PowerPoint, was evidence of intent. For that to be evidence of intent, there has to be a duty in the first place. There was not an argument that the 1993 order by itself could be used as evidence of intent, and that it was, I mean, just essentially it was too old. And just real quickly, in looking at Thompson for the restitution issue I cited in my brief, I see the application of that case. And I do agree, I think it's an issue of clear error. But in comparing Norm Stedelli with the victim in the Thompson case, different means, a different victim, a different location, and a different time, I think the restitution error, it was clear error on the district court's part. But that's all I have.
Thank you very much, counsel. The case just argued is submitted. We appreciate helpful arguments from both of you. And we will now take a 5-minute recess before we hear the remainder of the calendar.